Hello, I'm Douglas Frank, and I'm here with our Spotlight on Members project. Today, my guest is Steve Burden, and we are going to have a conversation. So thank you, Steve, for joining me.
You're welcome.
So how did you come into the Buddha Dharma?
Well, it's a little bit of a story. I'll try to make it brief here. When I came back from Vietnam, I immediately couldn't stand Iowa, so we moved to California, or I moved to California with a friend of mine. And I ended up getting involved in martial arts with Chuck Norris, who's relatively famous, and even Priscilla Presley was in the class, and studying in Tong Soo Do, and I'm really devoted to that. I was probably practicing about 5 hours a day, something like helping teach classes and things. And during that time, I kept reading these various things about martial arts that talked about Zen, and Zen and the martial arts, and how the true masters, there's, you know, transcendent fighting and all of that kind of stuff. And they could had siddhas. And I thought, wow, that sounds pretty interesting. And so I started kind of reading that a little bit, but mainly.
How old were you at this point? And what year is this?
Oh, this would have been, and I was probably 21 or 22.
Okay.
Like that. Maybe. Yeah. Probably that. Right. I had gotten really kind of tired of I got tired of smoking pot and tired of doing drugs, and I didn't really feel like that was going to be the answer. So when I stumbled into meditation and got involved in that, then that was a real eye opener for me at that point. And I started studying with a Vietnamese Zen master down in the center of Los Angeles. His name was Thich Thien Anh, and he had a big center down there. And so I did a lot of machines and studied with them for maybe a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. But there was a lot of emphasis on kind of turning Japanese and becoming a monk and or nun. I wasn't sure that I really wanted to do that. At one point, I did want to go to Japan and study, but didn't seem like that was going to be a possibility. But lo and behold, there was a poster that was presented about, because the LA Dharmadhatu had rented space in this center here, and it was all about this guy, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, coming. The name of the class he was going to teach was Tantra, Sex, and Money. So I thought, well, that sounds pretty interesting. So I signed up to go to the class, but I also saw all the Dharmadhatu members, and they had a much more diverse smattering of people. There were certainly more women involved. It was less kind of monastic acting, and I kind of gravitated towards that. So I sat down with them, and the Dharmadhatu in those days was rather loose, and after sitting Zen, and I thought they were pretty lazy and really didn't sit properly, but still there was something there that attracted me, and then I was very interested in Rinpoche. So that was my main introduction there. And then at some point I ended up wanting to go and either come to Naropa or do a Datun, and I talked to the regent who was visiting at that time, and he told me, definitely do the Datun, forget about Naropa. So I did the Datun, and then I got asked to stay on as staff. So I was staff at Rocky Mountain Dharma Center from 77 to 80.
Okay. 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 So that's the short version of what brought you into the Dharma.
That's the short version. Yeah.
I'm sure we could make a full-length movie.
Probably could. I think I would want Brad Pitt to
play you now or play you then.
Anyway, it would be that would be interesting, but maybe for me, but not so much for other people.
Do you have a Dharma teaching or a slogan that is like your North Star that you come back to?
I do. I definitely do. And a long time back, when Lama Tempa was teaching in Natartha classes in Boulder, here we were studying in Chandrakirti and looking at Madhyamaka and various things like that. We were using Tyler's book. I can't remember the exact title of it now. I was really struck by this phrase or quote, which was, as ordinary beings are bound by concepts, yogins free of concepts are liberated. The wise ones teach that liberation is the result of analysis. And that's a quote from Chandrakirti.
Chandrakirti.
You know, and the caveat is that analysis is not just study. Analysis is also analysis through meditation and conduct at the same time. But I've always loved that. And Lama Tempa wanted me to memorize it. So in keeping with my samaya with Lama Tempa, I have to, have to remember that.
So what does that slogan or that Dharma teaching mean to you, and how do you work with that through your life?
Trying to be well-rounded in terms of study, which I am the head of study, but also in terms of practice, yes, and really the analyze the mind, looking at your mind, and trying to see clearly what happens and what comes up and how long it stays, and being really involved in look at your mind, as Rinpoche would say, and mind the gap and those kind of things. I like the idea of analysis, especially analytical meditation. I really enjoy teaching that, and I think it can be a very, very powerful way to bring Vipassana concepts into practice. So
Chandrakirti. Yep. I think the book is Tyler's book is Feast for the Fortunate, I think.
Yes, it is, yeah. Yes.
Okay, all right. So during this period of time, is there a passion that you have that's captured you, that you're engaged with during this period of time?
This time of the time of COVID?
The time of COVID.
Yes, I have. Taken up a guitar playing, and because my brother gave me a Stratocaster guitar for my birthday back in April. I've been practicing about 3 hours a day trying to learn how to play guitar. And I think you're making some progress.
So you're doing basically, as we used to say, a nintun a day, a 3 hour shot of practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what color is your guitar?
I have two of them. They are both black, which I like that. It makes me feel like Johnny Cash.
So what is your aspiration through this practice of the guitar, and how are you bringing, or are you bringing Dharma into your guitar practice?
Well, I think it's certainly a bit of a shamatha practice. And it was interesting, I was talking to Dale Azrael, El Acharya Dale, and she used to play the guitar a lot, she referred to it as shamatha. And I think because of the amount of focus and the coming back, you get a little wiped out and burn out, and you play a little bit, and then you're kind of exhausted, but you got to keep coming back to it and keep tuning and keep playing. So I think there is a certain element of focus there. And I also think learning something new at my age and learning something musical at my age is really good for my brain. I feel like that I'm a little more perky than I used to be.
More perky in the time of COVID. So what is your aspiration through learning the guitar?
I don't have a real heavy aspiration. I just really would like to be able to play it and get the enjoy the benefit of being able to make some music. I mean, it really, when it comes together, when you play a song and it actually works, it's really quite, it really kind of, you know, I can feel it in my chest a little bit, because it's really delightful. Now, I used to be in the band in high school, so I have a little sense of this kind of thing, but I would like to at some point be good enough to entertain, you know, friends and family, but I have no aspirations for being on the stage.
What was your instrument in high school?
I played a cornet.
Cornet. So the cornet and guitar are pretty, there's a wide range in there. Yeah. So how is Dharma practice informing you or helping you during this period of time where we are spending more time alone and not with others?
I think it's been an excellent time for practice and for contemplation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in our practice, you know, a time where just to try to really develop equanimity, mm-hmm. you know, with the ups and downs politically and climate-wise and disease-wise and all that kind of thing. So learning to kind of... Mm-hmm. You know, be in the moment and, you know, not get too freaked out by things, but, you know, try to develop some wisdom, you know, in your response.
Uh-huh.
Important. And I have noticed, maybe it's a combination of the guitar playing and practice and being alone, but sometimes I feel like that I see more sharply.
Uh-huh.
You know, I look at something that looks like a pretty ordinary object, and I see, wow, that looks really amazing, really beautiful. It's an amazing manifestation, and you know, even though, you know, oh, I'm also seeing it as being impermanent and everything, mm-hmm. but it's very powerful, well, to see the beauty in ordinary things.
So there's a certain amount of clarity or precision, all of these words that sort of we talk about with this kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, I think so. It's you know, oh, and you know, being retired here, where I don't really have to worry too much about work, Eric, is also very nice. So actually, in some sense, this has been a bit of a luxurious time. Also.
Mm. 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 Well, thank you. And if I could, I would love to have you repeat the Chandrakirti piece, if you would, to end this with.
Okay, great. And I'll just throw this out there. We've been doing a lot of teaching in terms of the Mahayana classes and the Hinayana classes, and that has been really important for me in this time, because it really does focus me on Dharma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will give you the Chandrakirti piece again. And ordinary beings are bound by concepts. Yogins free of concepts are liberated. The wise ones teach that liberation is the result of analysis.
Hey, Maho. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for spending this time with me. And hopefully we will see one another in real reality soon.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Thank you.
Okay, love to everyone out there.